This is All the Way Authentic. I'm your host, Kevin P. Henry. Today we're going to learn more about the Washington West African Center in Linwood, Washington. We'll find out more about that and a great upcoming event called The Sounds of Africa, August 17th at Garfield Park in Everett, Washington, from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. Here's our interview.
I am Pa Usman Diouf. My personal name is Pa, P-A, Usman, and I am the founder and executive director of the Washington West African Center. I am from the Gambia, the tiniest country in mainland Africa.
Great. And how long have you been here in the Everett, Linwood, Snohomish County area?
I moved down here in 2015. From Alaska, Anchorage, Alaska.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now what were you doing up in Alaska?
Good question. Everything I currently do is linked and interrelated. I really went to Alaska to find freedom. I said I'm the executive director of the Washington West African Center. I came to the U.S. in 2004, lived in Georgia and North Carolina. In 2008, I was arrested and detained by ICE. For 3 months, 4 months, released on an order of supervision, put on a monitoring bracelet for 9 months, and putting me through all kinds of issues to turn me into a criminal. Really, I wanted that bracelet off of my leg, and I wanted to be independent. That's the only reason I ended up in Alaska, where I knew nobody. And of course, if you fast forward to what I'm currently doing, after I became a free bird, I decided to move to Washington and then started this nonprofit that supports the West Africans to make sure that they don't go through the same challenges that I went through, or even if they are going through it, they have some form of a guardian, a coach, and somebody, a shoulder to lean on, basically, and a space that they can consider a safe haven.
Yeah, it's so hard, I think, when people are especially going through a challenge or challenges, and they feel like they're totally alone. So I wanted to go back to a little bit of your whole experience with ICE and all that. So maybe give me a little more details as far as, you know, what kind of emotional, you know, things were you dealing with when you're going through this? I mean, were you stressed out? I mean, how would you describe that?
It's huge. I became a U.S. citizen on September 7th of 2022. This is 18 years of being in the United States. Fearful every day of being separated from my family. I am married with three beautiful kids. Every single day until that September 7th, I thought I was going to be deported back. I was living in fear. It had a toll on my physical, psychological, and mental health. I did not trust anybody that doesn't look like me that would come and talk to me about stuff. I thought they would take me away. ICE had manipulated, played me, lied to me so much that it was hard for me to trust government entities and government officials. They did everything possible to criminalize me, to turn me into a criminal, which I wasn't one. It made me hate myself at some point. It made me think, am I worth it? Is it worth it? Do I belong here? Can I live here? Because every single day, issues were coming up left and right. Like I said, I ended up in Alaska, not by choice, but because I wanted that freedom. When they came to arrest me in Georgia, I don't think my entire story can fit within this interview. It was all lies, putting me in jail for 4 months and put me on a monitoring bracelet with so many supervision rules that really were all geared towards setting me up. It was just so crazy. I did a lot of things that probably I wasn't even supposed to do. But indeed, as human beings, anything that is in between you and your survival, you would have to do. So what I say is the system is created in the United States for the longest to set people that look like us to fail. They put us through things that when we do them, eventually we end up probably doing what is considered to be bad for them to start blaming all the Africans, all the Muslims, all the things that I identify as an African, as a Muslim, as an immigrant, as somebody with a language barrier, as somebody that's undocumented. We are forced to do a lot of things that are created by the system, and eventually that same system will end up penalizing us, punishing us, and then we will all look at them again. black people, Africans, Muslims, immigrants, this and that, when they are the ones that created it, and by sitting at the table with us, talking to us, or letting us to do some few things, could have really enabled us to do better than what we have done. And yes, it's been a nightmare for me. I put that behind me. I'm not regretful of it. And that is why I created what I just have now to kind of support my community.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that. Are you still feeling any of the emotional effects from that? I mean, do you ever like have bad dreams or things like that? That, you know, people call it PTSD, I think.
Yes, occasionally I will stumble on situations, especially with the work that I do. Literally every day that somebody comes to me for something, it reminds me of the challenges that I went through. Today we are distributing food, and I remember when I was in Alaska, I had a piggy bank where I put coins because I couldn't afford food for my kids. I went to Sam's Club to buy a little bit of stuff. I just picked a few things from the aisle, and walking down to the register, I tripped, the piggy bank fell, the jar of mayonnaise fell, the coins scattered in the store, and everybody turned around looking at me like it was very embarrassing. The cashier I was walking towards had to shut down her register to, I mean, kind of help me pick my coins. On that very fateful day, somebody helped me to pay my bill, which was less than $20. I see people come to WAWAC every day, and they remind me of that day that I went to Sam's Club. So I definitely have a lot of those PTSD syndromes and reflections as people are coming to me asking for help. Currently, we have a young man that supposedly was convicted of shoplifting, somebody from our community. He was trying to do community service. No organization would take him in. We actually accepted him to come and work, I mean, and volunteer and do community service at our center. And it reminded me of how I was just pushed to be criminalized at the end of the day. It reminded me of those days that I had the monitoring bracelet on my leg, that I couldn't do anything, that I need to seek permission if I needed to travel 30 miles out of radius out of where I lived in Georgia. So it was really frustrating. That just led me to leave to Alaska, where I knew nothing. I didn't even know what I was going to. I just
were you there. And now, were you able to work in Alaska while you were there as well?
Yes, because when ICE arrested and detained me, they had me under that monitoring bracelet, order of supervision. Excuse me. They had this agency called G4S that was monitoring me and us at the time that they wanted to criminalize. I had to call in every day. I had to every month. I had to report in person multiple times in the month. I had to go to their office. They had to come to my house. If I needed to go anywhere 30 miles radius out of where I live, I had to go to their office, seek permission. So much has happened that cannot fit in this interview. And after doing my research, I realized going to Alaska would be the only place where I can go and not have this thing, because the same G4S was probably in Seattle. If I move down here, they will just transfer me to another branch of G4S here or another agency that had similar things. If I move to New York, much even worse, probably that's where the headquarters is. Everywhere I went in the lower 48 United States, it was going to be the same. And as a result, I went to Alaska, where they had no choice but to take off that monitoring bracelet on my leg, ease up the restrictions, and of course give me a work permit that I can go and work and start reopening my case and working towards adjusting my status.
Mm-hmm. Well, so let's talk about the organization you started. Like, when did you start it? And then I also wanted to find out about the different services and support that you offer people.
So the Washington West African Center was started by me in 2017 out of my living room. I ran it as an all-volunteer organization for about 3 years. Thanks to the death of our brother George Floyd, unfortunate to say it that way, the emergence of the Black Lives Matter movement, and COVID, that led to folks like us starting to have opportunities, starting to sit at the table, started to be listened to, started to have access to funding and all these other things. It was rather unfortunate. The type of services that we provide are informed by a need assessment survey that we did with the UW students of the students of UW Bethel back in 2021, where based on my lived experience and what the community says, right now as we speak, this minute, this second, every other Friday, we distribute 100 to 150 boxes of cultural relevant groceries to the community out of our office in Lynnwood. We have an after-school program. As we speak, we have a group of over 30 kids from King and Snohomish County that are on the ferry heading to the islands for a field trip because we have a summer camp and an after-school program called the BDU after-school program. And BDU means star. So we have a program for the kids to support our West African families that are working one, two, or three jobs, helping the kids with homework, supporting them, teaching them social and life skills, teaching them about their roots and their culture, and to appreciate who they are and not be apologetic about who they are. We have a grandma support group, about 140 seniors that come to the United States that don't have much to do, whose kids and grandkids are busy working. They stay home and not have much to do. We brought these grandmas together and created a platform for them to be able to interact among themselves as a support group. They organize several activities. They mend relationships and fix issues when the community families are about to fall apart and break apart. We support them with transportation. We take them to provide emotional support for people, that are mourning. Families that are mourning, like we have a deceased person in the community, the grandmas as a big part of this. And the highlight of it all is their annual grandma conference, which they do annually. And it just happened like 2 months ago, where they invited scholars from different parts of the country to come and give lectures on topics that are very relevant and important to the community. And this last one they did, they had about four topics, one of which was, raising our kids according to our culture, tradition, and religion. The rampant causes of divorce in the community, etc. We have a community van and bus that we use to provide transportation for the community members, newly arrived migrants, people going through the legal system that need to go to court hearings, appointments, fingerprint appointment, biometrics that are going for health and medical appointments, etc. Language translation and interpretation are part of the key services. It may interest you to know that West Africa is home to 16 countries, which are ethnically diverse with like over 1,000 languages and cultures.
One thing I
On
wanted to
top of this
ask
group.
you, well, and on that point, one thing I wanted to ask you is, have you, your family, or the people that you support and help have talked about discrimination or racism or any of that kind of thing? Or do you feel that most people are nice and treat you fairly and that kind of thing?
No. We feel discriminated against until this minute. And the typical and latest example I would give you is currently as we speak, I'm in talks with the Department of Licensing, who actually we have a community member or some of our community members who want a driver's license. They meet all the requirements. They are supposed to have an appointment. Because of their language barrier, they are not given an appointment until this minute. It continued to be rescheduled over and over. I had to request to have a meeting with their management to talk to them about this because they cannot have an interpreter to interpret for this person who meet all the requirements. We approached them and told them that we can interpret for our community member. We speak the languages that they speak. That is why they are coming to us to help them. And we help them to fill out the forms, do all the things that they need to do. We can do it. They said, no, it's a system. And when you talk about the systemic racism, that's where it is. It's deeply rooted in the system created by the government, created by the system that are in place. They said, oh, we have two companies that we deal with. They are the ones that provide language interpretation. Hey. These companies don't even have our languages because our languages are not written. And even if they were to have interpreters from our community who would claim to be speaking these languages, they have no way of vetting them. Because our languages are not written, when we go to interpret in any setting, whether the legal setting, the healthcare, or wherever, if it is in the courts, for example, the judge will only swear us in to say that everything we are saying is true to the best of our knowledge. We will interpret from English to the language and from the language to the English. And we say yes or no. The judge, everybody else in the courtroom had no clue what we are saying, whether it is right or wrong. And this lead to actually wrong conviction of our community members. If it is in the healthcare system, the same thing. It leads to wrong diagnosis of our community members. Because eventually, if somebody comes, I say, I have a headache, you interpret it, I have a heartache, I'll be treating for my heart instead of my head. I'll be diagnosed of a heart problem rather than a headache. And these are some of the challenges that our community continues to deal with at every sector of society, where people would seemingly want to understand our languages are not written. They create posters, flyers, and stuff in English. They'll tell you we have it in Korean, we have it in Spanish, we have it in French, and all of these languages. Let them show me one African language, West African language that is translated in. They will tell you Swahili or Amharic. Those are East African languages. So West African languages are not written, and these are part of the things why our community find it very challenging to have access to services, regardless of the agency or who is doing it. But that's just one issue out of the many several issues. When we talk about housing, currently, we have the challenge where our people are struggling with housing. They go to a place looking for an apartment, or organizations and entities that provide housing reject them or refuse them just because at the end of the day, I mean, they are undocumented. They cannot provide, proof of income or several other things that are needed, requirements that they don't have. And this is why we get into providing housing for our community, where we sign master leases with apartment complexes, and we put our people in there that we think generally cannot qualify for apartments or housing in the conventional housing sector.
Wow. Okay. Well, that was great. I really appreciate your explanation about that, because you gave me some great examples that I think we can all relate to, because I think what happens when you live in this country or in other countries, and you know, English is, I speak English, you speak English, but we take things for granted. You know, if I want to go get a license, I don't think about, oh, I'm going to have a problem because someone can interpret for me or translate materials and things like that. And I think that that's what people don't realize about systemic types of racism or problems, is that they aren't obvious to you or me necessarily, but to somebody else, something very simple like trying to get a license, a library card, trying to get healthcare becomes a huge challenge because the system isn't set up to accommodate that or that person or that particular culture or language. I wanted to get to, before we stop, I wanted to get to the event that's coming up on August 17th. So I wanted you to talk about that a little bit, and also just explain why an event like that is so important to the community.
Yes. So the mission of the Washington West African Center is to connect the West Africans in Washington with resources and bridge the gap between us and the wider community. I've mentioned some of them: the housing, the food, the transportation, the advocacy and outreach, language access, ESL classes, you name it. Now, for the longest, because of all these systemic racisms, because of our situations, because of fear of the system, lack of trust of the system, and a lot of the people, we've been isolated and confine ourselves and do things for ourselves, within us, by us, just us alone, for the longest. Now that the space is opened up, where we can sit at the table, and instead of being the menu, we are part of those deciding what the menu becomes. We are no longer the entree. Gone are the days when we are now the menu, that people will make decisions about us, that we are sitting at the table and making these decisions. I mean, we felt that it is important for our voices to be heard, for us to be unapologetic about who we are and come out and organize something that we will share with the greater Washingtonian community. And therefore, we decided that we are going to bring Africa to Washington by sharing our culture through our food, through our fashion, through our music. So it was a dream that I had for the longest, that I wanted to start before COVID. COVID hit and it was postponed. When the dust settled down last year and we've gone into the post-COVID era, I decided to, started it, partnering with Everett Community College. That's where we had the median edition, as a two-day event, August 4th and 5th. This year, based on feedback and the capacity gap and everything, we decided to now take it to Garfield Park, in Everett, which is going to be on the 17th, from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. And we will have a host of activities going on. We have a lineup of over 8 different live band performers, African musicians and entertainment that would be happening there. We have a wonderful fashion show where we will be telling you some of our stories through our clothes, an authentic fashion show. We will be displaying fashion from 19 different African countries, and our team are working very hard to get that up. We are at the tail end of it. We will be representing it through the fashion and the music, where we will play the music for the particular tribe and have the models dance to the music while wearing the outfit and telling you stories, which I'm very excited about. We have about 10 different food vendors. Altogether, there are about 60 booths that we are expecting. 72 have registered, so we are kind of contemplating how to go about it. But yes, about 60 booths will be there. I mean, 10 of which is going to be food, authentic African food, amazing food. That would be great. I mean, finger licking, an opportunity for the folks to try. Of course, the other booth we have, I mean, resource booth, nonprofits, different organizations, people that are selling and displaying and giving away, I mean, several things. Of course, we will be having backpack giveaway for our kids because we normally have, I mean, a back to school event. It's hard to put them to organize the two events back to back. So we have decided to now do them all at one place. I mean, at the event, so it will be very exciting. And we also have lots of great people, partners that will be coming through. And we're very excited about it to show Africa to the greater Washingtonian community, to share part of Africa with the greater Washingtonian community.
Well, like you said, bring Africa to Washington. What is the website? Could you give out that one more time, as well as the pronunciation of your name? Because I really want to make sure that people understand that.
My personal name is Pa, P-A, Usman, O-U-S as in Sam, M as in Mary, A as in Andrew, and N as in Nancy, Pa Usman. And my last name is Juf, J as in John, O as in Oscar, O as in Oscar, and F as in Frank. And our organization is Washington West African Center. Washington, as in the state, West African Center. And we are in Linwood. We are open Monday to Friday, from 10 a.m. to 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. And our website is www.wawak.org. www.wawac.org.
You have been listening to All the Way Authentic. I'm your host, Kevin P. Henry.